Now, the UK's best motorbike radio show. This is Bike Live with Lewis Sutherby and Andre Harrison. Let's go!
The 2015 MotoGP, Moto2 and Moto3 seasons are just 1 week away, and Bike Live is ready to tell you everything you need to know ahead of the new season. So many questions waiting to be answered in the next 2 hours or so. Can Marc Marquez complete a title hat-trick? Are Ducati for real after an exciting winter? Can Valentino Rossi add another world championship to his list? Can Rebecca James and Andre Harrison make it through 2 hours without arguing?
No.
Revealed over the next 2 hours. Not the most encouraging of starts from Dre and Bex. Good evening, guys.
Evening.
Evening.
How are we all?
Evening. I'm going to be praying for the next couple of hours, more than likely. Then I'm sticking out of my neck.
The other big question, of course, that needs to be answered over the next 2 hours is, can Bike Live redeem itself after the predictions fiasco of our World Superbike season preview?
No.
Those answers won't come in the next 2 hours. They'll probably wait until Qatar, but we will do our best to restore our fading reputation. Marc Marquez's reputation, though, is at an all-time high after winning last season's World Championship, and he won it, really, at a canter. He took the opening 10 races of the season to finish on 362.67 clear of Valentino Rossi, who finished as a runner-up, beating his team at Jorge Lorenzo into third place. Danny Pedrosa was fourth ahead of Andrea Dovizioso, top Ducati, Paul Espargaro, top Satellite, and Alicia Espargaro, top open rider. Bradley Smith was top Brit in eighth, with Stefan Bradl ninth and Andrea Iannone in tenth. Marc Marquez heads into the season, of course, as the defending champion, and Dre, I think he heads into it as the overwhelming favourite.
Yeah, I've not seen anything to suggest that Lorenzo and Rossi are closer in any way. I know Yamaha's been going crazy over their seamless downshift, and getting that sorted out was a possible, you know, needle mover, but I'm not convinced at all, really. I still say that Marquez has 0.2 on the whole field, on maybe more on a good day. You know, Honda are the premier team in MotoGP. Yamaha, I think, are like 99% of the way there, but I think the difference between bikes is so minimal, I don't even consider it a factor. I know a lot of Lorenzo fans do, but I don't. And I've not seen anything to suggest that they're going to be better this year. So for me, it's all roads lead to 93, in my opinion.
Yeah, they still remain the gold standard in MotoGP, don't they, Bex? Both Marc Marquez and the Repsol Honda team. Have you seen anything over the winter to suggest that Marquez's string of titles could be broken this year?
No, not a hope in hell's chance. I'm sorry, no. There is no doubt in my mind that he's going to come out all guns blazing in the first Grand Prix of the season that we've got coming up in a week's time. I literally cannot wait. I'm counting down the days. but no, there is only going to be one person lifting that title. Unless something drastic happens, God forbid, you know, I honestly can only see the fact that he missed his X amount of Grand Prix due to illness or injury or whatever the case may be being the only reason he doesn't retain his title for a third time. Seriously, guys, like, there's no conceivable thought in my mind that the Yamahas are going to be anywhere near as close to knock him off his perch. He is just a machine, and that Repsol Honda is just, it's unstoppable, and it has been for years. So, no, Marc Marquez, guys, congratulations. We'd just like to congratulate him now for the 2015 World Championship victory.
You're only 7 months early.
Yeah, I was going to say about 7 months early, but hey-ho, who cares? We all know that it's pretty much probably going to happen.
I should have flagged up the spoiler alert at the start of the programme. Yes, we've already given away the outcome of this season's championship. It gets underway in 9 days' time in Qatar, the opening round of the season. In fact, when we speak to you this time next week, free practice will have already got underway at the opening Grand Prix of the season under the lights in Qatar. The second in America's host round two on April the 12th. That runs back-to-back with Argentina. The European season starts on May the 3rd at Jerez, followed by the traditional European venues of Le Mans, Mugello, Catalunya, Assen, and the Sachsenring. That leads us into the summer break, which is ended on the 9th of August with the Indianapolis Grand Prix. That's back-to-back with Brno after the many, many stories surrounding the British Grand Prix. Not the Circuit of Wales, not Donington, but Silverstone hosts the British GP on the 30th of August. Misano hosts the San Marino Grand Prix on September 13th, followed by Aragon and the traditional Asia-Pacific triple header with Motegi, Phillip Island and Sepang preceding the season finale in Valencia, where, of course, Marc Marquez took a 13th victory of 2014 late last year. And in terms of his preparation for this season, Dre, it's ominous, really, considering that he won the first 10 races of last season's World Championship, having broken his leg in pre-season. No such preparation problems for Marquez this year.
Yeah, no crazy motocross adventures with an injury in it this time around. So, yeah, you're going to probably most likely get 100% Marquez right from the get-go, which is probably the entire field's worst nightmare.
And they don't have any apparent weakness, do they, Bex, either, with Honda? I mean, they're a team that for years have... Yeah, we've had these engine limits in MotoGP where you're only allowed to use a certain number of engines per season, and Honda have always come quite a way short of that limit. They've always had an engine or two in hand at the end of the season. It's not as if we can point to reliability as a weakness for Honda. They just have every base covered.
I think there's an ultimate package, and the Honda team, the Repsol Honda team, they have that ultimate package. I think everything just works like clockwork. They all work for one another, and you know, when something's so perfect, you can never see it faltering. I think that is the severe case of what we've got going on right now. And then Marc Marquez comes in two seasons ago and just fits in there like he'd been around for the same amount of time as Valentino Rossi. He was like he was made for that team, and that team were made for him. And when you put those two things together, And as I say, they work like clockwork, and it just is a match made in heaven. It's so harmonious that it's going to be we're going to probably have not a boring, because it wasn't boring last year, but we'll probably have like the first 10 victories go to him again, if not more, because he's 100% fit, given the fact that he's got 9 days to again go and break his leg. But please don't. Like, please don't do that. I had a heart attack last year when I read that story.
More spoilers, everybody.
But as I say, when two things work so well like that, and it is so perfect, it's an incredible team, and it's an incredible joy to watch. It's not boring. You know, people argued that Formula One and Red Bull and their dominance of 4 years was boring, and I have to agree on the tendencies that sometimes the races were boring, but the Repsol Honda dominance, I don't see it as boring, because there's plenty of other things happening in the rest of the field that sort of keep the action going, and you just let Marquez, like with 8 laps to go, just steal a march and romp home to victory.
And even so, Honda have not been that dominant, in the sense of Yamaha have never been that far behind them, really. Heck, Lorenzo was world champion just 3 years ago. So
it's not exactly been like a great massive verge between them.
No.
But in that sense, that's why MotoGP is in my opinion better than Formula One. But I've always been a two wheel person. But that's by the by. So I can't. I'm guilty as charged. Can't help it. But as I was saying, like it's such a harmonious relationship that they've got going on, and everyone works for one another, and you couldn't get anything more perfect. And if I was on anything or in any other camp than the Repsol Honda team this year, I'd be quaking.
Could then the biggest threat to Marc Marquez winning a third straight World Championship be Marc Marquez himself?
Maybe. Like, in the sense of, like, if there's one very, very small chink in Marc Marquez's armour, it's that sometimes he pushes it a little bit too hard. We saw that at Misano last year, and we saw he had a little bit of a rough patch in the second half of last year where he went a little bit too hard. His inexperience when it came to handling the wet weather in Aragon cost him what was a surefire victory. And situations like that where, you know, maybe his inexperience will cost him just a little bit here and there, but overall, he's going to be a year older. He's going to be a year wiser. He knows where the limit is. That's why he crashes so much in practice, but rarely ever in the race, because he knows where the limit is by the time the race rolls around. So, I mean, maybe, just maybe, if he's under a little bit more pressure this year, that might happen. But then again, he wasn't blowing out the field that much last year either. So, I don't see a major problem with that.
No, I see what you mean, and I see like why you asked that question. I just think that he knows when to push and he knows when to stay safe. And yes, all right, you take away that that very, very dodgy race that we had last year. He decided to stay out, and then Kyle Crutchlow managed to get third, or whatever happened. You know, it was just, that was just a black flag. You have to miss that. That was the anomaly race where we saw him and his inexperience come through. You know, and the decision that, you know, he made the wrong decision. He thought it was right at the time, and maybe if he'd have been a bit older and a bit more wise, like Jorge Lorenzo, who made the decision at the right time, went in chain, you know, we could have seen that in a couple of years' time, we'll probably see Marc Marquez making that decision. But in terms of, is he going to be his worst enemy? I don't think so, because as Dre said, he's a year older. He's got a year's more experience behind him, so he knows yet again when to push, when to hold back, when to know, when to just settle for what's going on and what's on the given to at the moment. So, honestly, no, I don't think that he's going to be the factor that stops him from winning the title. I think it's virtually sure bet, if we're all completely honest with ourselves. But it was a good question, but no, I think he's going to... He'll be mature enough. He's just turned 22-ish or so in February. So, good number, 22. But anyway, he's just turned 22, and, you know, he's not won two world titles for nothing and stacking it in the wrong times. You know, he gets the job done when he needs to get the job done. And you saw that last season, instead of going out for the win right from the lights going out, he'd wait till like 10 laps to go, or 8 laps to go, and that's when he'd really put a march on it and go for the win and make his way up to the front of the grid. He was quite happily sitting in second and third for a lot of the time and letting the other guys do all the legwork. And that's when his maturity came across. He's only going to get better this year.
In terms of where the perhaps chink in the Repsol Honda armour is, this is going to sound horrendous, but Danny Pedrosa, right? What kind of season can we realistically expect from Danny? I mean, is he realistically, to all intents and purposes now, Marc Marquez's number two, or could he still be more than that?
If Danny Pedrosa was ever going to be a thing against Marc Marquez, it would have happened by now, in my opinion. And it's like, he's had 2 years to see the other end of the garage and see what the deal is with Marquez, and it hasn't happened yet. In fact, he's not been in the same postcode as Marquez in either season that they've been together. So, not so much in 2013, because Pedrosa actually won 3 races and got 300 points. But besides that, like, last year said it all. I'm pretty right in saying that Marquez beat Pedrosa head-to-head, I think, 16-2 last year. So, I don't see it. Like, if Pedrosa was ever going to be a thing against Marquez, it would have happened by now. I just don't think Pedrosa's in the same league as Marquez. And I think Pedrosa's just going to wind down his contract and then be let go, because I just don't see how he beats Marquez over a season. Unless Marquez has a season from hell, which is just not going to happen for a kid that talented. And Pedrosa suddenly finds half a second. I don't see it. I just don't see it. Like, right now for Honda, he is the world's greatest number two. And he is a wonderful convenience to have more than anything else. But, you know, one of those things.
Yeah, he's still only 29, is Danny Pedrosa. It's amazing that he's going to be around for so long, but he is only 29 years of age. And he's to my mind, one of the best riders, maybe even the best rider of all time, never to win a Premier Class world title. He's been so close so many times and so unlucky with injuries in particular across his career. And it's amazing to ask this question of someone of that calibre, but is he riding for his very future in MotoGP this year?
Quite possibly. I mean, 7 times in his career he's been in the top 3 of the championship. 7 out of the 10 years he's been in MotoGP. And that's ridiculous. It's just, I've always said it, Pedrosa is the victim of the golden era. And, you know, ever since Nicky Hayden rolled around in 2006 and, you know, narrowly pipped Rossi to that 10th title he so desperately, you know, wanted in the grand scheme of things, he's always played second fiddle to someone just a little bit better than him, whether it was Valentino Rossi, Jorge Lorenzo, you know, Casey Stoner, and now Marc Marquez. He's the greatest victim of the era. How can you win 26 top flight Grand Prix and not have a championship? That's insane. It's absolutely ridiculous. Pedrosa is a brilliant, brilliant rider in his own right, and it's just a darn shame that he's been caught out by arguably 4 of the greatest riders we've ever seen in this sport, more than likely to have been pit by, which is just a darn shame. But I think you're right. I think he's riding for his future. The problem is, the only way he's really going to impress is if he beats Marquez, and that's going to be near impossible, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's almost like the Andy Murray of MotoGP. Mm. He's part of that big four, but he'll always be the fourth guy of that big four, yeah. It appears, in MotoGP. And where is it, Bex, do you think, that Danny Pedrosa falls short? And that's not a poking fun at his height, by the way. I'm genuinely asking the question. Where is it that Danny doesn't quite match up to the Lorenzos, the Rossis, the Marquezes, the Stoners in previous years of this world? Is it perhaps mentally where Danny's not as strong, or is he simply not as talented?
I think that on some levels, I believe that he's not as talented. I honestly thought that his year to shine was 2013, because, as Dre pointed out, he'd played second fiddle for years before that, and he was coming up, and he was a bit. I viewed him going into the 2013 campaign as the guy that was going to teach the kid the tricks of the trade. And I'm not saying that he was the best person to learn the tricks of the trade from, but it was the case that Marc Marquez was the rookie and Danny Pedrosa was going to be the one that showed him, you know, the way and the means of the premier class. And there was no one... I tipped Marquez to have a decent year. I didn't quite tip him to A, win the championship, and B, beat his teammate to that extent. All right, Danny won races, yes, but still was that Marquez out classed Danny Pedrosa most of the time, and that to me was the big wake up call, where I turned around and went, well, actually, maybe he's not as good as we sometimes prop him up to be. You know, we always say, oh, he's had a bad weekend, it was this, it was that, it was the other, but then for a rookie to come up and just kind of obliterate him 2 years on the trot, and more nine times going to ten, he's going to be 3 years on the trot, when they're on the same bike, you just think, actually, there's got to be something somewhere. The only thing I can think of is, and this is no, like, sort of grip on Danny Pedrosa or whatnot, I think maybe he's, the downfall for him is possibly that he's not got such a strong backbone. He's not got the grunt behind him and, you know, the, I want that space and you've given me an inch, I'm going to go for it. He's sometimes a little bit too nice. That's probably the best way I can put it. Do you know what I mean? Mm. He's not... He doesn't always go out there and sort of shoulder butt and make himself and his presence known and dive up the inside of people. And I think that's maybe sometimes where he falls a little bit short, because he's not aggressive or as aggressive. And that really tells, because when, you know, we saw it last year and we saw it the year before, when Marquez was aggressive and you know, really fought for his place against his teammate, against Danny Pedrosa, Danny threw his teddies out of bed. Mm. You know, and said that, you know, and he was very disgruntled with what Marquez had done, and he said that it wasn't fair and whatnot. Well, let's be honest, we saw numerous riders in the past all do exactly the same. I think it was more the fact that he couldn't stomach it was his teammate and his rookie teammate that was doing it to him. But I think that's the problem for me. I don't know whether you agree that his aggression and the sort of fight and determination to really assert himself on track isn't as strong as, like, say, the other three, if we're going to call it as a top four battle. And that's really where he probably falls short. And I think unless he grows some balls and really sort of inserts himself, then he's always going to fall short, because those three won't take any crap from no one, in terms of, you know, Marquez, not Danny Pedrosa, Jorge Lorenzo or Valentino Rossi. They won't take no crap from no one, and they will make sure, you know, if they want that position and they want that bit of track, they will go and they will put their bike there and stand the other guy up, and that's exactly what you should expect to happen. And I don't think Danny kind of does that. He's a little bit too nice. Yeah. He's the nice guy of the sport, and that he'll always be the bridesmaid and never the bride if he continues like that. So he needs to grow a pair, get a little bit more manly, put his bike where it shouldn't be, and maybe, just maybe, he'll save his MotoGP career.
With all due respect, his manliness is not the problem. That man has ridden through so many injuries in his career, it's ridiculous. His toughness is not the problem here. His problem is he's just not as good as the other three, more than anything else. I'm sorry, I just don't think he's on that level. I don't think it's a matter of, you know...
So if we always put him on the pedestal too much, then have we always made too many excuses for him?
I think so. Not massively, because he has ridden hurt a lot, and because he's so small that, you know, he's more susceptible to getting hurt and whatnot, and, you know, that's held him back in previous years. But if you've gone 9 years in MotoGP being on the best bike and you've not won a championship, then something has, you've got to draw the line somewhere. There was always that talk he was going to lose his job after 2012 when Martin Marquez was got promoted, and that basically Casey Stoner's retirement saved his job because he could just hop him on Casey's bike instead. But man, like, he's had no excuses the last 2 years, and he's not been in the same ballpark though since that time. It's just, ugh. You know, I've run out of patience for Pedrosa, and I think Honda deep down has as well. I was always curious as to why he got that 2 year extension last year, because I was thinking, could they put Scott Redding on there? Or could they put Alicia Spagaro on that bike and maybe they get a bit more out of it than Pedrosa has at the moment? That was my way of thinking. But obviously, you know, when it comes to team convenience, Honda can have a really good number two who still might occasionally win you a race, which is what Pedrosa has done the last 2 or 3 years. And that's more than acceptable to be a number two rider at Honda. But it's more of a pseudo number two than anything else. I don't think there's any team orders or anything like that in the Honda camp. But it's just a natural number two by ability more than anything else. And that's still quite a handy thing to have.
Yeah, I think we're being critical because we're talking about winning a world championship here, aren't we? We're not no one's saying that Dani Pedrosa is not a great rider, because he is. And again, to continue the tennis analogy, we're comparing him against three of the best that this sport has ever produced. I mean, in Rossi and Marquez, we are almost talking of the Federer and Nadal of MotoGP, you know, one of the all-time greats and someone who could well go on to supersede those records in Marc Marquez. And that is what we're measuring Dani Pedrosa against. And that is where he's at right now. But this is, and I was watching some of the MotoGP classics on BT Sport this week, and the Estoril 2006 race appeared, as it always does in any MotoGP classics program. And I have to say, if you told me when Dani Pedrosa took Nicky Hayden out and potentially cost him a world championship that we'd be talking a few years down the road of Dani Pedrosa going into his 10th season with Repsol Honda, I would never have believed you. And yes, he's not up there with the all-time greats, but to go 10 years with a team such as Repsol Honda, you've got to be doing something right.
Yeah, because, you know, he's always been good enough to be a runner-up or a top-three player. Because, like I said, he's been in the top three for 80% of his career in the top class. It's just there's always been someone, whether it's his own teammate or on the Yamaha camp or just Valentino Rossi, because of how many careers he's probably tainted because of Rossi being that darn good for the better part of a decade, if not more, then you know, it's kind of been the negative downside of it. I mean, imagine if Rossi had never been around. Gibbonell would have been a world champion.
Yeah.
Marco Melandri probably would have been a world champion. Max would have probably had a world championship or two by that point in time as well. So like, Pedrosa's more an unlucky sign of the times more than anything else, because it's like Michael Schumacher in Formula 1. Like, if Schumacher had never rolled around and dominated F1 for the first 5 years of the 21st century, then how different would the landscape have looked? Like, Raikkonen would have had a world title, Montoya would have had a world title more than likely. It would have been a completely different landscape more than anything else, but it's just, I'm being a little bit harsh on Pedrosa, because the guy is a brilliant rider, and like I said, 26 wins in a top flight career is incredible. I think he's near the top 10 list for all time when it comes to GP wins in all three categories as well. So his longevity has been excellent as well, especially for a guy that gets hurt a lot. But, you can't help but draw that comparison when we've had so many brilliant riders, even in the last 5 years, that have rolled around in the top flight and have, you know, gone on to greatness, like Lorenzo, Stoner, and now Marquez. It's just, he's more a victim of his own success than anything else.
Yeah, I think 2015 though could well be his last chance to become a MotoGP world champion, if he's going to do it in his career. The chances of adding a 10th Grand Prix world championship for Valentino Rossi are quickly running out, but I don't think that's something that Valentino Rossi sees quite that way. I think he's at the stage of his career now where he's almost racing for the enjoyment in his MotoGP career, and we're certainly enjoying watching him too.
Oh yeah, I mean, obviously, you go into a season and everyone wants to, you know, the ultimate aim is to be the champion at the end of it, but, you know, Valet's been around so long and he's had a fruitful career for the whole time he's been here, and you know, he's like the godfather of MotoGP, and so long may him continue. I'd rather have him continue, you know, constantly finishing second, third, fourth and whatnot in the world and having fun and genuinely getting off the bike with the smile that we all know and love for a good couple of years, then him win the title and say, right, I'm going to leave on a high now. Because the day he goes, he's going to be hard enough as it is. We don't want that to come around anytime soon. So if he's happy, you know, being, you know, he's still getting he's obviously not getting a title, but he's still getting a championship medal. Or, you know, he's still in a contention for a championship medal, yeah. Albeit second and third, or second or third. And, you know, at his age, with what, you know, everything, you know, that is still an achievement. He, as I say, he's like the grandfather, he's the godfather of MotoGP, and I don't want to see him leave at, like, any time soon. I, fingers crossed it's not, he doesn't make an announcement at the end of this year, because I think I will have that Friday Bike Live show off. off as a day of mourning, because I don't think I'll be able to stop the tears for 2 hours to be able to do a show.
Emotional distress.
Yeah, I'm going to get a doctor's note and everything, because to legally like leave me out of the show, because I will just be that heartbroken. So, but I think I speak for every MotoGP fan out there at the same time. It's going to be a harsh, sad day when that day eventually does come round. So, even I think if he knows in his heart of hearts that realistically he's not got a chance of actually getting the glory that be the holding that having the number one and having the world title at the end of the year. But I think why really stop now? Why should that really bother you? If you're doing something you enjoy, then you're not going to stop doing that. And I think no one can argue the fact that Rossi doesn't enjoy this and doesn't love the thrill of getting on that bike. Year in, yeah, week in, week out, when the season gets up going, and I certainly enjoy watching him. And long may it continue.
I don't think Paul Espargaro will mourn the day that Valentino retires, because he's a guy sitting on a Yamaha contract and waiting. True. I think he was sitting there when Valentino Rossi was undergoing those horrendous problems with Jerry Burgess and that Acrimonia split, thinking my time may have finally arrived, and then we see this revival in 2014. And prior to that revival last year, Dre, I thought the possibility of another Valentino Rossi championship was a complete pipe dream. Mm. Is it slightly more likely now? I mean, is it a case of if Yamaha can produce a package good enough, then Valentino Rossi is still good enough to take on Lorenzo and take on the world?
I don't know whether it was just we gave Rossi a little bit too much credit because Lorenzo had such a bad year, because we all know Lorenzo is a demon when he's at his best. I mean, if the world championship had started in Brno this season, Lorenzo would have been world champion. There's a fun fact there for you. But we all know, like, Lorenzo was the perennial number one dude until Marquez rolled around. And it's a tough one, because it's like, I want to say that Rossi's the leading contender, but I just have a bad feeling in the back of my neck here that Lorenzo's going to be the number one contender more than anything else. Because, don't get me wrong, I want to see Rossi do well. I always have, and last season was, I'd say, up there with many of his greatest titles, and just in terms of shocking the field at 35, winning multiple races, and being the runner-up in a Marquez-dominated championship. Like, that's good enough to applaud the man more than anything else, but it's just, like, Yamaha or not, like, I'd be surprised if Rossi outmatches Lorenzo two seasons in a row, because I like to chalk it down more to Lorenzo having the year from hell than Rossi being, you know, that much better. I'm on the fence on that one, but it's just, I lean towards Lorenzo more down to recent body of work than anything else.
I think we've seen two very different seasons since they came back together as teammates. We've seen 2013, where Lorenzo was taking the fight to Marquez and Pedrosa, and Rossi was the perennial fourth guy. And obviously he's then gone through a bit of a transformation in terms of his crew chief and whatnot in his garage. And now Lorenzo's had the bad season. I think what we're going to see this year is something in the middle of the two. I think we've got a much improved Rossi on 2013 and a much improved Lorenzo on last year. So it is going to be fascinating. I think it's going to be a very even contest between the two, and I can't wait to see how it plays out. But let's talk Lorenzo, because he was probably public enemy number one on this program at many stages last season. Have we got a fresher, hungrier, and more importantly, Dre, a fitter Jorge Lorenzo in 2015?
Yes, in my humble opinion. Lorenzo won't make the same mistake twice. He's very clever. He's in the prime of his career at 27 years of age now. And, you know, like I said, on his day, Lorenzo can win any given Grand Prix, which is something I can only say about him and Marc Marquez, period. They're the only two guys in the field I can say that about. And He's been running race simulations during the daytime when he was in Malaysia, and he seems like he's in better spirits. He looks like he's in better shape because he was coming off a pre-season surgery last year, and he was not 100%. He was complaining about the bike very early on, and it wasn't working. I'm not getting the same complaints this year, so, you know, I don't think Marquez will do what he did last year where he ran the table for the first half of the season and run 10 in a row. But for me, I think it's good. I think we're definitely going to see a better form of Lorenzo than we did last year, for sure.
Let's certainly hope so. And yeah, it was astonishing, wasn't it, Bex, how off colour Jorge Lorenzo was at some stages last season, and for him, his very fitness to be called into question really astonished me. I mean, I saw some tweets from David Emmett saying that, you know, Alpine stars, like it is, who produce his leathers, are having to bring two separate sets of leathers for him on a certain weekend because his weight was just fluctuating as the season's gone on. And that's certainly not a mistake that Jorge Lorenzo is going to make this season. And in terms of his championship chances, I think Marc Marquez has rewritten the rule book on what is actually required to win a championship this season in terms of your consistency and how many wins, how many podiums you're going to have to get over the course of a season. And for Jorge Lorenzo to leave almost 50 points on the table in the first two races of last season, that's one thing that Jorge will be absolutely desperate to avoid this season. He knows he must get ahead of Marquez early. He cannot leave himself too much to do like he did last season.
No, you can't give, you know, that much of a gap. You can't give a mile to Marc Marquez. You can't give an inch to Marc Marquez, if we're completely honest. Because yes, Dre, you said that if it had begun in Brno, he would have been world champion. But the fact of the matter is that it's so dreadfully awful, and that is fact, at the start of the season, that it was near on impossible for his title chances to sort of pick up. And
this I can't deny. Yeah, he was 120 points down by mid-season. So
was,
you know,
you can't give. I mean, at that point, you know, he'd have probably wanted to have been 20 points down from Marquez at most, not 120. And so when you look at it like that, like he's going to, I think it was the wake-up call he probably needed. Yes, he got injured a lot and whatnot, but it probably did him the power of good, because he'll come out this season and he'll be hungry and he'll be fighting and he'll get out the blocks quick. And I hope that he does, because I quite like Jorge Lorenzo. I know you don't. Well, you never seem to like him, because all you seemed to do, Lewis, last season was moan about him and rip him to shreds.
It was deserved.
It was. Yeah. But I'm nice, and I try to see the good in everyone, and I try and make everyone look nice and feel good.
What good was there last year? He was moaning about the tyres, he was moaning about Rossi beating him, he was moaning about the bike's electronics, he was moaning about his injuries, he started his shoulder plate in. He was moaning about everything.
So the kid can moan. We know Lewis can moan. All he does is moan about World Superbikes. We don't ever go at him. Well, no, we do, but we just don't get on air.
It's justified moaning.
Okay. But no, I think that this year we're going to see the Lorenzo of old, and we're going to see the Lorenzo that has been a world champion. Whether he can actually do it, because it's going to be tough. He's got the competition and a half. But I think the bike's probably there or thereabouts. Will be by the end of the season. I think it's just, if he can win that mental debate with himself that he clearly lost early on last season, then we'll probably see him really, really pushing hard and snatching points away from Marquez at various different rounds. Good enough to win the championship overall? Probably not. But good enough to finish second, definitely, because he's hungry this year. He realised what an ultimate mess last year was, and anyone looking that didn't really know MotoGP and didn't know the name Jorge Lorenzo would have probably been going, well, who the hell is this kid that's just like throwing his teddies out of bed at every given moment and opportunity that he had a mic shoved in front of his face, which is what he did pretty much, because all he did when he had a mic shoved in front of his face was moan and rant and swear and do whatever else, other than say that hold his hands up and say, look, I'm not on my game. And that was the problem. I think we'd have all had more respect for him last season if he'd have just held his hands up and gone, look, yeah, it's me, I'm the problem, I need to work on it, rather than blaming everyone else. A bad workman always blames his tools.
You remind me, actually, when you're talking about Lorenzo there, of a tweet that Jake Callahan, at Jake Petrel, had sent into the show a couple of weeks ago, and I've got it in front of me because I forgot to mention it on air at the time. At Downforce Radio, the main Yamaha story this year is going to be if Lorenzo can defeat the voices inside his head this year. That is the question. And, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see if Jorge can conquer those demons. Cause I think if he can, we could have a real title contender in Jorge Lorenzo. We've covered the big four in MotoGP that have pretty much monopolized the top step of the podium over the last couple of years. Could they be joined this year by a couple of rivals in red? Because this week in Qatar, the test, well, the two dry days that we got, were dominated by Ducati. Dre, are they for real in 2015, or are they punching above their weight in testing?
This is the big kicker for this season, more than likely, because we know the satellite blacks will get up there, but they won't be challenging for wins now and again, for obvious reasons, but Ducati are the X factor here, and whether they've got enough to upset the apple cart in the top four consistently, rather than just whenever it rained and whenever an asymmetric front tire didn't work. I'm on the fence. It looks like they're close, but you've got to remember as well, Ducati are going to run soft the rubber again because they're a factory two team, so they're going to get the concessions. And them running soft the rubber did not work for them last year. It did not work at all. They'd often fade in the second half of races most of the time, and you know, they'd fall into the midfield, so to speak. Whether that will happen again this year, I don't know. We've not yet seen them in race trim. You know, they're qualifying. Their one lap pace looks very, very good. I'm sure they'll get a pole position or two here and there this season.
I think they'll pole next weekend, to be honest. I will be amazed if anything other than the Ducati is on pole next weekend.
Especially because they can run soft the rubber, can't
they? Exactly. And a lot of people, yeah. I did see a lot of people when the testing times came up from Qatar over the weekend saying, oh, but Ducati are on the softer tyre. No, Ducati did not touch the softer tyre at all in Qatar last weekend. They were genuinely quickest on the harder of their two tyres, which is also available to the factory teams. They were genuinely fastest. And whether they can do that over a race distance is remains to be seen. But Marc Marquez said in his interview with MotoGP.com that they've got a second a lap in their pockets if they put that softer tyre in qualifying. So if a Ducati, if anything other than a Ducati is on pole next weekend, I will be astonished.
Yeah, with that logic in mind, yeah, Ducati's going to, because Ducati might lock out the front row. Like, has anyone got money on Danilo Petrucci yet? just throwing that one out there. That might be an outside bet there for you there, kids. Like, don't, you didn't hear that. You heard that from Bex, not me.
But what? You don't rope me into this and your wacky ideas, Andre.
Hey, you heard it here first, okay? You have the fan base on the show. You pencil this one in. But, essentially. But, yeah, like, if they're that fast on the harder tyre, which I did not know until you told me that fact, then the whole field is screwed. Essentially, at least in qualifying, like, you know, yeah. Marquez is not going to be getting 15 poles again this year like he did last year.
This is the thing about these concessions. Obviously, they get the softer tyre and they will have those concessions withdrawn from them based on their success this year, but those concessions will not be withdrawn based on pole positions. They'll only be based on victories and podiums. I think three victories and they lose their softer tyre. Three podiums and they lose their extra fuel. So I think they'll lose 3 litres of fuel if they get three podiums over the course of the season. That's three dry podiums.
Yeah.
And the podiums that they got last season do not apply. It's a clean slate completely. So the podium that Dovizioso got in Texas last year does not apply at all. So Ducati, at the very least, will have all of these concessions available to them until round four of the season in Jerez. So they're going to be so difficult to beat on Saturdays in the early stages of the season. And, yeah, I mean, soft tyre or not, Dre, concessions or not, there can be no questioning that GP15 is certainly a step forward on the GP14. Soft tyre or not, they've made a big stride over the winter.
Oh hell yeah! That's not even worth debating. It's leaps and bounds better than the GP14. It's obvious. They've even brought back winglets, which got all the old school bike nuts all happy. So Ducati are the fan favourites now all of a sudden now too. But yeah, all of a sudden, yeah, that bike looks a lot better than last year. And hell, if this is the case, watch out. Like, Andrea Iannone, if there was a pole trophy in MotoGP, Andrea Iannone might win it this year because the guy has adapted to that bike like a glove. So watch out for him to have another breakout season like he kind of did last year. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Crazy Joe can do on a faster bike. But yeah, overall, the GP15 looks like it's going to take a huge step forward for the team. I just hope in race trim it can still, you know, keep up, basically.
Yeah, they could well be the biggest threat to Marc Marquez in Qatar next weekend. As I say, over the course of the season, on every circuit, whether they can repeat that kind of performance, it remains to be seen. But, you know, the progression is certainly there. And we saw them on the front row enough last season with the GP14 to suggest that they could well do the same this year. And as I say, I think they're going to be very difficult to stop in qualifying, certainly in the early rounds of the season, while they have this softer tyre. But, Beck, should they have this softer tyre? I mean, I think Jeremy McWilliams made this point on Twitter during the week, that if they've made this step forward, should they still be considered? I know we haven't had a race yet, so there's no results to really back this improvement up. But if they've made this huge step forward, should we still be considering them as factory two? Or should they conform to the same rules as the factory teams?
That... You can see both... There's going to be two sides of the argument, and I think you can probably see both sides of the argument, because though they've been quickest across, a fair few times across testing, yeah. But we also saw that their one lap pace is it obliterates people. But then you put that race, that pace into a race pace, and they just, it doesn't keep up. It does well for like two thirds of the race, and then it just physically, the Ducatis just cannot maintain that consistency for the whole race. So when you look at it like that, then yeah, I think they should, because otherwise they'll go from, at the moment they're a pretty cushy big fish in like a small pond, but they'll go to being a little fish in a big pond in that sense, because they'll just get, having these concessions taken away, they'll just get eaten up, because they're not strictly big enough yet, and they haven't made enough advances yet to be considered good enough to be put on that pedestal to go against the likes of the Repsol Hondas and whatnot. Like, it's not viable yet. But so there's two sides to this. It depends on how you sit and how you feel about Ducati as a personal fan sort of base. I think, you know, at the moment I'm quite happy to see them using these concessions to continue developing, and then next year, if all goes well for 2015 and 2016, kind of moving up and going, yeah, you know, we want to play with the big boys now and see what we can do. I think if they'd have had these concessions taken away from them now, it would have been too drastic too soon. Does that make sense? I think at the minute they can't be considered to be good enough and to make as many advances, or to have made as good of an advance towards the big boys, to warrant those concessions being taken away already. You know, that would just literally be pretty much shooting anything that they've done so far and any advances and that they've made so far in the foot, because they haven't yet mastered and been able to consistently be up there with the other guys. And until they start doing that on a more regular basis, then I don't think they can logistically be considered to have these taken away from them. I think it would rewind and it would be one step forward for them actually being amongst the big boys and considered like that, you know, having the concessions taken away, but it would effectively be two steps back, because any progress that they had made would just be undone, because they wouldn't be able to keep sort of building up on that knowledge and that they've got so far. So no, I think it's the right move personally that they've still got the concessions.
Let's just clear up the regulations as they stand. They get 24 litres of race fuel with 12 engines for the season. And there's no freeze on the development of those engines either. They can continue to develop those engines. Should Ducati achieve a race win, 2 second places or 3 podiums in the dry, their fuel will be reduced. They'll be reduced to 22 litres. If they claim 3 victories in the dry this season, that is when they lose their softer rear tyre. All concessions confirmed until the start of 2016, where the hope is that everybody will effectively be running to open regulations. There's no question this season that Suzuki will be running with those concessions too as a new manufacturer to the series. And Dre, has pre-season testing boosted our expectations for Suzuki? Because I didn't have the greatest of expectations for them. I thought they were going to be making up the numbers this season, perhaps populating the midfield of MotoGP. Has pre-season testing suggested that Suzuki could do a little bit more than that this year?
After his bum skin and his general poor space, I'm going to debut a new hashtag on this show of hashtag Randy Depinier ruins everything. Yeah, I think Suzuki are a little bit better than I thought they were going to be. It looks like they're going to slot into the midfield quite nicely, and they could be messing with the satellite teams, like Tech 3, like LCR, or more like Cal Crutcher, because Jack Miller's on an open-class bike, but, you know, nice paint job. essentially, like the Pramac team as well, who you know, came on quite strongly as well last year, Iannone and Hernandez. I think they could be in that pack, battling for midfield points, you know, maybe top 6 to 12, that kind of area, because it's a bigger field in general, so 12 actually means a little bit more than it did last year, or maybe a couple of years ago, where 12th place was considered a terrible result because there's only 16 bikes in the whole field. but basically, yeah, I think Suzuki are a little bit better than I thought they were going to be. It looks like they found something over the case of winter testing and whatnot, and you know, I'm looking forward to seeing where they slot in. And you know what, they've probably got an excellent rider pairing in Alicia Spagaro and Maverick Vinales. I mean, that's a very, very strong pairing, so they'll easily find a couple of attempts themselves to make up the difference if they're lagging behind a little bit. So there's a lot to admire about the Suzuki branch at the moment, and I think they'll come along quite strongly.
Yeah, we know, Bex, that you've got a very high opinion of the Suzuki rider lineup, as you've argued vociferously on previous bike wise.
I'd just like to take you back to the end of last season, when me and Dre debated quite a lot. And I said that you can't ride the Suzukis off, and Dre virtually turned around and said, yes, you can. Just like to say, look who was proved right so far.
So you're telling me, like, minor top tens is being proved right?
Yeah.
Rubbish. Yeah. Rubbish.
Well, is that what we are expecting for Suzuki this season, Bex? Is top 10 around where Suzuki are? Do you think?
Yeah.
Although you have told us on a previous show that you think Maverick could triple the podium this year.
I think he could. Why not? Why not? I honestly believe.
Podiums?
I didn't say he'd definitely get one. I said he will challenge for one. There's a
lot of really good bikes that's in the way between them and a podium. You've got Tech 3 with Pola Spagaro and Bradley Smith. You've got Cal Crutchlow on a Honda. You've got Scott Redding off a Mark VDS. You've got even the Pramac team, which looks solid. And if they could easily qualify very well with Petrucci and Hernandez as well. You think they can challenge for podiums? That's a loaded midfield.
I think I think they could challenge for a podium come towards the end of the season. Whether they get that podium, completely different story. But yes, I think come towards the end of the season, when they've, you know, they've had half the season, three parts of the season under the belt, you know, they've got better, the guys are Elish and Maverick are used to the bikes and are settled and happy with what's going on the Suzuki bikes, and I honestly believe that one of them, don't quite know which one yet, that remains to see, could possibly be up there, even if it's just for the last couple of laps, and then he tails off on the last lap. But I honestly believe that he will be challenging, or one of them will be challenging, to come the end of the season, that, you know, he'll be in, say, like, fifth, sixth place, and not far off the guys in second and third. I honestly believe that. And I called that before the end of last season. I said that, you know, the Suzukis could be a surprise package, and that you couldn't really go on what Randy Depinier was putting in, and so far
he ruins everything.
He does ruin everything. That, and, you know, it should be taken more seriously than what we are actually taking it.
It's pandemic.
Let's get it trending, guys.
Hashtag blame RDP.
Yeah,
yes,
there you go.
Yeah. Maybe not. It doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well. But, yes, let's go with that.
Well, what we are going to get, though, I think, just coming back to the actual on-track action, one thing we are going to see, I think, is a huge fight on every single Saturday to get into Q2 in qualifying, because If you think of the bikes that we've got on the grid, we've got those two Suzukis to throw into the mix. We've got such quality now, because you've got the top four that you would expect to get into Q2 on a regular basis. You've now got the two Ducatis, which are so quick over one lap. You've got the two Tech 3s. You've got the two satellite Hondas of Crutchlow and Reading. You've got the Pramac Ducatis. Now you throw in the Suzukis. There are going to be some huge scalps on Saturday afternoons this year.
That's a very, very good point I did not consider, and that's absolutely spot on. The fight, like, because you know what? There could be seven or eight different teams battling around that 12 spot. And, you know, like, the top 10 automatically go through, we know that. 11 to 15 could be absolutely ridiculous next year. And, you know, I was very sceptical of the qualifying format when it first came out last year. It actually kind of works now we've got a competitive field.
And I mean, just looking at the pre-season testing times from Qatar this week, these are the overall times from the week. Andrea Dovizioso quickest on a 154.9. That's a tenth ahead of Marquez and Iannone, who was second and third. Then a bit of a gap to Lorenzo and Rossi in the two movie star Yamahas. They were in the mid-55s, fourth and fifth. Danny Pedrosa sixth, Cal Crutchlow seventh, Bradley Smith in eighth, Paul Espargaro ninth, Carol Abraham in 10th on a production Honda. Johnny Hernandez then 11th, ahead of the first of the Suzukis, Alicia Spargaro on a 55.7. That's just 3/10 down on Lorenzo in 4th, with Scott Redding 13th and Maverick Vinales 14th. Hector Barbera did a pretty quick time earlier on in the week, having got a toe. He was 15th overall. And that's the thing, Joey. We've got, with the addition of Suzuki, I think we've got the strength and depth of MotoGP this season is arguably as good as it's ever been.
Yeah, absolutely. The midfield could easily be the best it's ever been in this sport. And I'm not using that term lightly, because, you know, not just in terms of bikes, but in terms of talent. When guys like Alicia Spargaro and Maverick Vinales can't get a look in, you know, for podiums, which I don't think they'll get, or even challenge, to be honest. But,
we'll see.
You know, Paul Espargaro was a top tier runner and had an excellent rookie season. Bradley Smith came on strong the second half of the year. Redding was excellent on an open class Honda last year, and I'll stress that out. Andrea Iannone shocked a few people here and there as well. The midfield is absolutely stacked, and now we've got two more bikes in as well thrown in to make it even more interesting, as well as Pramac on concessions as an open class runner. And if the production Honda can find something in the middle of the season, it's going to be ridiculous.
It seems as if they genuinely did find something in Qatar. Mm. As I say, with Abraham up in 10th, that's just 8/10 down on Dovizioso, and, you know, just slightly less than that down on Marc Marquez on the factory Honda. And Carol Abraham is just one of those underrated riders that just seems to pop up every now and again with a standout result. And he could be a guy to do it this season. If he can pop up in the top 10 in Qatar, then there's hope for the likes of Nicky Hayden, Eugene Laverty, and indeed Jack Miller on those production Hondas. We've got four Brits in the field. Let's cover all four of those. And let's start with two that are on Hondas, Scott Redding and Cal Crutchlow. Cal Crutchlow, I wonder how he'll be thinking, Dre, seeing the speed of the Ducati in pre-season testing. I think he was happy to get out of there when he did. And I think he'll have to be happy with his lot. He'll be happy that he's now on a satellite Honda. But what's the target for Cal Crutchlow this season? Is it getting back to podiums and potentially fighting for victories again, or is it a case of trying to put his name in the shop window for that second factory Honda at the Repsol team?
Let me think.
If we assume that Pedrosa is on thin ice, then logic suggests there could be a place up for grabs there.
Logic would dictate that, but I think Honda would go younger rather than older on that one, because Crutchlow's 29 himself, so I don't think they'd replace a 31-year-old Pedrosa by that point with another 31-year-old. There's too much young talent in the sport for them to ignore, in my eyes at least, anyway. I could be wrong on that, but
I guess with Cal, I suppose, Honda might turn around and say, if Cal does start getting poles and podiums on the satellite bike, they may well say, well, you're clearly good enough on that bike then.
Yeah, you know, if Crutchlow smashes it on the LCR, it's a very safe bet, and he definitely put himself in the shop window, because it would be an easy transition. It's effectively the same bike. So, yeah, it's a good point when you put it like that. But for me, Crutchlow is a realistic aim. Top six, I think, would be a nice way to go. I think with the occasional podium, possibly, if something happens to the front field, if it's a wet race, again, we can all see crazy things happen. I think the yardstick I like to use is one, his year at Tech, his last year at Tech 3 in 2013, where he did get on the podium multiple times, and, you know, he was fifth in the championship that year, beat Stefan Bradl as well that year as well, who was on, you know, a factory Honda, effectively just in a different coloured paint. And Alvaro Bautista, the year afterwards, where he was challenging for podiums on occasion, he was in that leading pack of four or five on occasion as well. I think that's the kind of ballpark where Cal needs to be aiming at, because he was showing some promise again on Ducati towards the end of his run there last time around, and I'm not expecting him to beat any of that top four, because realistically they're in a different ballpark, really. Mm. But if he can be the best of the rest, challenging Ducati for, you know, top five, top six kind of honours, I think that's a pretty realistic target.
What was interesting about Cal Crutchlow's interview with Neil Hodgson on BT Sport earlier in the week was this dynamic with the other two Brits who are on similar levels of machinery, Bex, and he spoke about Scott and Bradley both looking to be top Brit this year, and I thought it was an interesting insight into the way Cal Crutchlow's mind works. He said that he's not interested in beating Scott and Brad, because he says they're not at the level that I want to be at. In other words, he says that I want to be a lot higher than top Brit. I want to be challenging the very top guys. I guess that gives us an insight into the mind and the psyche of Cal Crutchlow. He is still aiming to challenge the very top guys in MotoGP, and top Brit is something that doesn't really appeal to him.
I think that says a lot about his test of character. I think it would have been very, very easy for him to have just lost all heart after last season. And that shows that he's got a strong test of character, that he still wants, you know, he still thinks he's physically able to try and mix it with those guys. And from a British perspective, obviously we all want to see the British riders do well, or at least I love seeing the British riders do well. I like seeing something we actually are quite good at, and motorsport seems to be our thing. We do tend to do quite good. But realistically,
sorry, had to do it. I'm terrible.
Oh, Dre. Me and you, sunshine. You will have that stiletto hanging out your neck by the end of the show.
What was wrong with that?
I
showed a bit of hometown pride.
You're showing like your allegiances and everything. Props to Britain and all that.
Yes! Like how could that ever be considered a bad thing?
Nothing wrong with a bit of patriotism.
Now and again. If it works for Sky Sports and the Hamilton Network, it works on here.
Right, okay, I'll bear that in mind when you rip the mick out of me for the Moto2 that we're going to come up to next. I think that says a lot about his test of character. And it's, you know, I remember the interview, I can't remember exactly what it said, but I remember there was an interview last season on BT, and they had him and Brad together, and there was a little bit of banter going about, because obviously Brad was joked that along the lines of Cal not having the best of seasons, and the fact that he always blamed the bike and whatnot, and it was the truth that exactly him and that bike didn't get on, and it wasn't ever going to work, and it was the right move for him to go. And so fair play to him. I hope he does manage to sort of be as good as he still thinks he can be, because there'll be nothing worse than him possibly not being able to mix it with the guys that he wants to mix it with, and end up in a tussle with Bradley Smith and Scott Redding. And it'll be even worse if he actually lost that tussle, because I think it'd do his confidence. I think it'd shatter it to smithereens.
Which you think will happen?
I do, because I think Scott Redding's going to be top Brit.
Well, let's talk about Scott Redding then. While you're on a roll, let's talk about Scott. I mean, he's been slowly getting to grips with that factory spec Honda after moving from the production bike last year. Is he a guy that's just going to improve and improve as the year goes on, or do we think we can expect him to be competitive straight away in Qatar?
Oh God, no. He's going to be one of those guys. He's going to be like a late bloomer. He's going to steadily progress. What was that snigger for?
You know damn well what that was for.
Don't, because I will corpse again like I did last week.
It's too easy with you.
Don't make me bail you out again.
I'll try not to, but...
Thank God this is pre-recorded.
Go back to last week's show, 1 hour and 12 minutes in, if you want to find the moment.
As if
Rebecca
you
James
actually wrote the timestamp down.
And it's
I've been listening to it on a loop since last week.
But no, I think Scott will be, you know, all I did last season was sing his praises because I don't think he got enough praise from the media for what he was doing on the bike he had. That what he made that bike do things that were just downright wrong. It should not. He should not have been that good.
What, crash it.
Should just face
downright wrong. What a way of describing it. Like, what was he doing then, Bex?
No, obviously he was doing a good job. I'm saying he made that bike do things that it shouldn't have been capable of doing, and I think that says a lot about his riding ability. He is a naturally talented, gifted rider that he's going to have a fruitful career. I'm not going to say he's going to win endless amount of championships, but I'm going to say that, you know, when he does make a name for himself in the Premier class, he's going to be one of those guys that, you know, sort of takes it by storm. He might be another Danny Pedrosa. One of these guys that's
Scotty sitting in a tree about to lose their privacy.
I don't think there's room in that tree with the Lois Brothers.
It's a big tree.
But no, but to be fair though, we asked the question about Cal, and it does occur to me that, you know, if Honda are going to look younger, if they're not going to take a look at Cal for a potential successor to Danny Pedrosa,
it's the obvious answer.
They look at Scott.
Absolutely.
It's the obvious answer.
Absolutely.
And I honestly think that in a couple of years he will warrant it as well, because I think he'll be good enough. I'm not going to expect him to finish like fifth or something in Qatar. It's not going to happen. But what I do expect is over the course of the season, he slowly starts creeping his way up, and he gets more consistent. And, you know, I think it's going to work. You know, it might not happen in the first half of the season. It might take to, like, you know, after the summer break. But I believe that when it clicks, and whatever has been missing, or, you know, the fact that he just needed race pace and race time and race experience behind him on this new bike, back with Mark VDS, that when it does click, he's going to storm and march, and there will be no stopping towards the end of the season. I honestly think that when it works for him, and when whatever, you know, sort of clicks in his mind or clicks in the back room or whatever the case may be, I believe that Scott will have a good couple of races, and he's really going to steal a good few points, because the bike he's got is pretty decent, the team he's got are more than decent, the relationship he's got with that team are, again, even more than decent. And so, you know, we spoke about the whole Repsol Honda thing being the ultimate package. Well, that ultimate package has been established for a couple of seasons, right? This is the next ultimate package. Not in terms of dominance, but in terms of the whole, the bike suits the rider and the rider suits the team, which is the Marquez Repsol Honda thing. This is the next ultimate package kind of in blossom. And in a couple of years, if he's still there, you know, say 2-3 seasons, or like if we look to 2017, then, you know, it'll be his third year on that bike. Then, you know, I can expect that he will definitely be the top Brit then. I've tipped him to be the top Brit this year, but that might be because he is probably my favourite Brit. But we'll leave that a little bit out.
All I heard about was you, Scott Redding, favourite Brit, and mentioned the word ultimate package about 6 times. It wasn't disturbing in the slightest. Bang! Thank you, kids. I'm here all week.
Well, I have to ask you, Dre, about Scott and how you think he'll get on. I mean, I'm sort of sat on the fence. Bex is sat in a tree, as we know. How do you see Scott getting on? I mean, he doesn't see it that way in terms of, you know, he wants to start slowly and then build his way up. He feels as if he's got to be competitive straight away, because he's got 2 years on this factory spec Honda, and then after that, you know, there's no guarantees from there on. He's then going to have to find his own way. So I think he's putting a bit of pressure on himself to be competitive with the other satellite bikes straight away. Is that where he should be aiming at?
Yeah, like, as much as I'd like to roast Bex for her earlier comments, I mean, they already kind of did, in a sense, essentially, she made a fair point. It's going to take him some time, more than likely. He's still learning now. I think he'd be the first person to tell you, if you interviewed him today, that he's still working on things. And I'm not expecting him to be up the front. And that's the difference between, I think, a rider like him, who's still 22, and a guy like Cal, who's been there with really good machinery and who's 29, is a little bit more experienced. And I think he's got a bigger chance of hitting the ground running and being able to get into that top six immediately more than anything. Because the thing I mentioned about Cal, his one lap pace is absolutely exceptional. It's up there with the very best once he's on a decent bike. So for me, I feel like Cal is gonna be the top Brit. I've said this before. Even though I was tempted to go with the Flying Ginger the last time we talked about this, which I don't know what came over me for a second there. But for me, I think Redding is going to be... I think Redding has got the bigger upside as opposed to a 29-year-old Cal at this point in time. I just don't think we're going to see it there yet. I think Cal will be the guy to hit the ground running, and I think that's why Cal, in the early game, will carry that advantage throughout this season. But I have to agree with what Bex is saying. I think Redding will be the guy in 2 or 3 years' time.
Perhaps not to expect too much too soon from Scott Redding. There's no question, though, that Bradley Smith won't get that same free pass in 2015. I don't think, Dre, there are many riders coming into 2015 under as much pressure as Bradley Smith. I think his task, he's not got any short-term goals or any sort of goals that he might want to achieve this season. For me, his task is simple: beat Paul.
Yeah, that's got to be the only target. Like, from day one, he made it quite clear. He wanted to beat Paul Espargaró, who was penciled in as the Rossi replacement, essentially, because, Paul Espargaró got promoted in 2014 with a factory-supported contract from Yamaha. So, essentially, they could pencil him in the moment Lorenzo decides to move on, or if Rossi retires, whatever comes first, basically. And Bradley made it quite clear from the get-go. He said, "I want to make Yamaha's life as difficult as possible." And so he wanted to upset the apple cart and beat Paul. Didn't quite happen for him last year. No. And struggled in the first half of the season quite heavily, culminated in that 5-crash weekend he had in Germany, which still scars Lewis's memory. But for me, like, I think he's got the hottest seat of anyone in the field, in the sense of, with a combination of him being on a decent bike, him underachieving on said bike, and a loaded Moto2 field when it comes to talent pool, and especially when it comes to guys who the field, I think who Dorna want to see do well, like Johann Zarco, because they want a Frenchman up the top, or if Alex Marquez has a ridiculous rookie year, or if Alex Rins has a ridiculous rookie year, there's going to be teams answering phone calls to try and get him in. So for me, there's a lot of pressure on Bradley Smith, and it's a make or break year for him, especially given he's on a 1-year contract. And, I think Hervé Poncharal's played it quite clever. If it works out, he can just re-sign him again. If it doesn't, he can move him on and get somebody else in there straight away.
Well, Bradley Smith has got a lot of kudos within the Tech 3 family. He's been with that team now for 4 years, if you include his 2 years in Moto 2. But Bex, there's only so long that loyalty will maintain his seat for. And we all know that, of course, Yamaha called the shots there. They would have liked to, I think, put someone in Bradley's seat for this year, but Tech 3 and Hervé Poncharal decided against it. So surely if Bradley has another season like he had for the bulk of 2014, it's going to make Hervé Poncharal's life almost impossible in terms of being able to justify to Yamaha that he's the guy to keep.
Yeah, I think he definitely needs to come up with some goods this season, because I mean, we spoke about it, I think it was at the start of this year, the first one we did, that we said that he was kind of racing for his career, and we were all three of us pretty good that it came to this, and we can't put it down to as to why it has come to this, and we've got this sorry state of affairs where actually it could be the fact that if Bradley doesn't have a good season this season, then that could be his MotoGP career over. And he hasn't really got started. Why hasn't he got started? He's got a good enough bike. And I think that if he doesn't come up with the goods this year, then he will probably be the first one to be fully expecting the Tech 3 guys to, replace him. And I'm sure Bradley will understand if he does get replaced, because I think he knows in his heart of hearts that he's not performed to the ability that he was probably expected to perform when he moved up. In that sense, though, I wouldn't like to see him being shunted out quite so soon, personally. I honestly think that, you know, towards the end of last year, he started to make A-Road promises and, you know, and started, like, started making towards some sort of progression. Hopefully he'll start out from the blocks and keep that progression and that momentum going. I don't want it to, I think it could be a good, possibly, like, a partnership that could work in the long term as long as they don't want short term goals.
I think Bradley has recognised that the margin for error has disappeared now for him, and
it's now or never, and
Dre mentioned his poor starts last year, which is half right. I mean, he did actually start the season very, very well. He was very quick in Qatar, got on the front row of the grid, and finished a very close fifth, very close to the podium in Texas, but it was there from round three onwards where his season really did fall off the rails. He wanted to try and change and adapt that Tech 3 Yamaha to make it a better bike towards the end of, I think he was trying to make it a better bike at the beginning of races where he was losing all the ground and ended up tying himself up in knots and didn't go back to that base setting until mid-season. I think, from my point of view with Bradley, his highs are very high, and I think at his best he can beat Paul, but his lows and those troughs in his season are way too low, and it's those that will cost him his future in MotoGP. He's got to cut out those accidents, because if he hadn't have had as many crashes last season as he did, he would have probably finished sixth in the championship. He would have beaten Paul. He very nearly beat him in the championship at the final race of the season, but he crashed too often, and I think Bradley knows now that, you know, he's not going to get another second chance with Tech 3. He was, I think that reprieve that he got in the summer of last season really did boost his confidence, and we saw how well he finished the season. I think he now knows that he cannot afford those kind of mistakes again if he's going to stay, maybe not stay in MotoGP, but certainly stay on a competitive bike in MotoGP. He could end up going the Stefan Bradl, Alvaro Bautista route, where Bradl's on a forward Yamaha this season and Bautista's on a tail ender of an Aprilia. And I don't think that's the route that Bradley wants to go down. So, yeah, 2015 could well be a make or break season for him. And that battle to be top satellite rider with the three Brits and Paul Spargo is going to be absolutely epic throughout the season. I think it's going to be very close between the four of them. We have a fourth Brit as well to talk about in Eugene Laverty. He's moved across from the World Superbike Championship. I think he's another rider that we maybe can't expect too much from in the early stages of the season, not least because he's on a production Honda. But Dre, this is a guy who has certainly earned his spot on the MotoGP grid.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a long-running thing. He was a perennial top guy in World Superbikes. I think it was just going to be a matter of time if the right opportunity came around. And we've seen more guys from World Superbikes make the jump over in recent years into the MotoGP ladder, like, you know, Sam Lowes who else am I missing out here? Carl Crutchlow is another obviously big example of that as well, because he jumped from World Supersports champion and walked right into Tech 3, which is a top-level seat. And, you know, James Tozen, another easy example.
Ben Spies as well.
Spies, you know, was a top-tier guy in that regard as well. So it's happened before, and, you know, Laverty is a very, very good rider, and I think he'll fit right into that Honda outfit, and, you know, he deserves an opportunity like this one. It's a shame that other guys that were promised roles, like Jonathan Rea, for example, who was very, very loyal to that Honda outfit. It's a bit like being promised to you know, you eventually get that opportunity, which never really came for him, unfortunately, due to circumstances of the MM93 variety. But essentially, you know, sometimes these things happen. But yeah, you know, it's great, a great opportunity for Eugene, and I'm sure he'll grab it with both hands.
Yeah, he forms the part, Bex, of, I think, the most exciting crop of rookies to come into MotoGP for quite a few years, possibly since that 2012 crop of Marquez, Smith, Iannone and the likes that moved into this class together. We've got Eugene Laverty, we've got Maverick Viñales, we've got Jack Miller, and we've got Loris Baz. That's a stellar group of rookies that we're seeing into MotoGP this season.
Each on their day are very, very, very exciting riders. Sometimes, in some certain cases, for the wrong reasons, but still exciting riders all the same. And it's going to be an absolutely incredible season. I think I'm kind of a little bit I'm glad that Eugene Laverty got this move. I'm more kind of a little bit gutted that it actually came sort of this late, because he's 28, Dre.
Yeah, in his prime, essentially.
Yeah. But, I mean, could it have been that, you know, a season or two earlier when he'd have had time to sort of adapt and learn and then be there now with experience beyond him in his prime? In the, do you know what I mean? In the Premier class? Because is it too much to say?
If I'm honest, I think you may have been better off waiting a year for when the rules dramatically change in 2016 with, you know, Michelin tyres and, you know, a standardised ECU, which everyone's going to be running next year. He may have actually been better off waiting a year, but, you know, if a decent MotoGP team comes knocking and they're offering you a bike which could be a second a lap faster than last year, which is what Honda was saying about the production Honda, you know, I'd find that very hard to say no to if the opportunity rolled around, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's definitely going to be one of those, but as Lewis said, that we the rookies that we've got this year are, mate, it's going to be like a minefield out there. It's going to be, I can't wait. Nine days, that's all we've got to wait.
Yeah, and no crazy rushes or anything like that. And, you know, hopefully nobody ticks off Loris Baz, otherwise he will rant about you on Twitter, essentially. But I've said it before, I think, I said it last year, it was the best field in the sport's history. This year, it's somehow gotten even better. And you know, with guys like Eugene Laverty and Loris Baz, who was a top-tier guy in World Superbikes again, making the jump over, and Eugene, who's another top-tier guy, making the switch. And if Suzuki are competitive, then it's going to be fantastic. Petrucci's on better machinery and whatnot as well, and Scott Redding's given the bike he's probably deserved for a little while now, and it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's an absolutely stacked field, and I absolutely cannot wait for next weekend just to see how it all falls into place.
Likely to start at the back of that field, and that's no disrespect to them, are the Aprilia team of Alvaro Bautista and Marco Melandri. Don't get me wrong, I'm happy to see Aprilia back into the championship, but they're not gonna pull up many trees, are they, in 2015. Is this season, Dre, effectively a test season for them? Because we know that they're running what is effectively a developed version of their Aprilia ART CRT bike that they've ran in MotoGP over the past few years before their fully fledged factory bike comes out in 2016. So should we consider this season as a test and nothing more for Aprilia?
Yeah, they're basically Marussia at this point in Formula One terms, but I'm not holding out much hope for Aprilia on this one. It's a shame because it's actually quite a good team on paper. You've got the returning Marco Melandri, who again was a multi-bike championship contender, and Alvaro Bautista, who didn't have the best of years last year, but was a top five, top six guy in MotoGP. It was a stacked team on paper. Melandri was a former world championship runner-up as well. So you'd think that was a really nice-looking team on paper. It was a good, experienced outfit there. And it's just to turn out that the bike is maybe 2 seconds off where it really needs to be in terms of pure speed, which is just a shame. And, yeah, I think you're right. I think it is a glorified test season. And I think Aprilia know that. They came out on the record and said, you know, it takes 3 years to be really good in this sport. And they know it's just an adapted version of their old bike. We know the full factory machine is coming next year. So if anything, Aprilia is just kind of phoning it in for a year, which, you know, might end up taking Marco Melandri down the road of depression, poor guy. By the time this season was, I was already unhappy in Sepang, and the season's not even started yet. I hate to think what's going to happen by the time he gets through October. But, I think it's going to be a glorified test season for Aprilia, which is a shame, but if they end up being really good in 2016, it'll probably be worth it.
We're going to come on to Moto2 in just a second, but we can't let MotoGP go without some predictions, and now I've come up with a few quick fire questions to bring out some predictions in Dre and Bex. They haven't heard these questions yet, so it'll be interesting to see what their answers are. They're intended to be one word answers, but if you want to elaborate, by all means, go ahead. And so we'll start on that Aprilia message. My first of the questions is, will Marco Melandri see out the season?
Yes, he's a professional.
Bex?
That's not a good sign, is it?
Through gritted teeth, yes.
Right. Stefan Bradl, Loris Baz, Hector Barbera, Mike D'Amelio, Alex De Angelis, Carol Abraham, Jack Miller, Eugene Laverty, and Nicky Hayden. Who will be top open rider?
Oh, God.
Ooh. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Hector Barbera.
2014 Ducati will be on board. Bex?
I don't like these questions. Put me on the spot.
The best moment when Bex is off her toes. You could be here for some time, folks. You might want to skip ahead 15 seconds on your iPhone.
Shut your face.
Shall I name it again?
I'll shut my face when you give us an answer, Max.
We've got five questions to go yet.
That is horrible. I don't like that. I'm gonna go. It's not gonna happen. But I just really like his riding style, and I'm gonna go. I'm waiting for Dre to laugh. I'm gonna go Nicky Hayden.
Oh, crikey!
It's not the worst shout. I'm gonna go for the cop out answer, because I realised I didn't answer the first question. I don't think he will. I don't think Marco Mangi will see out the season. By the way.
Wow.
And in terms of who I think will be top open rider, I'm gonna go Stefan Bradl. Okay. I think that is the cop out answer. I think that's he's probably favourite.
It's the safe bet, really, isn't it?
It's the safe bet on the forward Yamaha. I think it will be him. I think we already know one of our panelists' answers to this question. In fact, I think we know all of them, but I'll ask it anyway. Will a Suzuki finish on the podium?
Ladies first.
Yes.
Trey? I think there was a yes in there.
I am going to roast you so bad in November, like you will not believe. No, don't be silly.
Yeah, I'm going to say no unless it's wet. I think we should answer the question. Will
that's
they finish?
A cop-out answer,
will they get a dry podium? No.
No.
I think that's what
no.
they can't say.
Lies.
You said that.
You said yes.
Dre, go back to the other week, right, when I said...
Where's the courage in your convictions, women?
If we have another race where... where was it? That was absolutely... Yes. That was absolutely, off the scale. If we have another race like that, then it can just be a carbon copy. And that's exactly what could happen. And in that sense, then you could get a podium. One of them could get a podium. You can't say that it's not going to happen. If it happened last year, history can repeat itself. And if we have another stuffed up race like we did then, and the big boys either stack it or whatever the case may be, or just make completely the wrong decisions, then one of the Suzukis could creep along and steal a podium.
Remember, listeners, when I said these would be one-word answers?
Listen, if that happens, I will be best man for your wedding to Alex Lowe's, okay? It's not happening.
Neither's the wedding to Alex Lowe's, but hey-ho. We're all good.
Petrucci, Hernandez, Smith, Espargaro, Crutchlow and Redding. Who will be top satellite rider?
Go on, Beck. Say Redding. Go on. Crutchlow.
All right, then. Redding.
Right. No. Oh, the no. Smith family is going to kill me. Paul. I think it's going to be Paul. I so hope I'm wrong, but I think it's going to be Paul. Which also answers my next question. Bradley or Paul?
Paul.
Paul.
Clean sweep for Paul. Rossi or Lorenzo?
Lorenzo.
I don't like him. Gah! Lorenzo.
I'm going to go Rossi. I so hope it's Rossi. Last question, mercifully. Will anyone outside the top four win a race?
No.
No.
I think they will. I think a Ducati will win somewhere.
Stop being such a hipster, son of a bitch.
And it's the... Well, I think this is going to be the easiest question of the lot. The 2015 world champion will be... Drumroll. I think we all know who we're going to say. Marquez?
Mike DeMeglio. What?
Get good odds on that one.
I checked this morning. Only a mere 1,000 to 1, everybody. So get on that. Mark Marquez. Let's be real here.
Any argument, Bex?
No, Mark Marquez all day, all day. I'm tipping him to probably get a podium in every race.
Now there's a shout. Try and find odds on that one. Yeah, I think we'll Well, you can pull us up in November if we are wrong on these, because our predictions haven't exactly been foolproof so far.
I am forgetting that one, Bex. I am forgetting you saying about Suzuki on the podium.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. that's fine. I hope Suzuki hear this and realise that they have an avid fan out here that's putting her neck on the line.
Well, time indeed will tell. Let's move on to Moto 2 then. And for the first time in Moto 2 history, we will have the defending champion coming back to defend his title. Tito Rabat took the championship last season ahead of his then Mark BDS teammate Mika Kallio. Rabat taking the championship by 57 points ahead of Kallio. Maverick Viñales was third. He's the only rider in the top 15, I make it, that has left Moto2 this year. Only Jordi Torres down in 16th in the last season's championship has moved on. So from Viñales downwards, we've got Tom Lüthi, Dominic Agata, Johann Zarco, Simone Corsi, Luis Salom, Sandro Cortesi, Marcel Schrotter, and the likes of Franco Morbidelli, Anthony West, and Sam Lowes, and indeed Xavier Simeon and Jonas Folger. They are all staying in Moto2 this season. Mm-hmm. It is a loaded field, Dre, as you mentioned.
Absolutely.
How do we see this going? Rabat has a new teammate, of course, in defending Moto3 champion. Although he's not defending his title, of course, he's the reigning Moto3 champion, Alex Marquez. Does Rabat, much like Marquez, start as the odds-on favourite?
Yeah, he kind of has to, really. I mean, Rabat was... He had, on paper, the greatest intermediate season in the sport's history. He broke the all-time points record last year, despite running out of fuel on the last lap in Valencia, which I still find hilarious. But for me... He's the class of the field. He's consistently brilliant. He finished every single round last year, only finished out of the top four once that same season. It was the eighth in Aston where he was super conservative, and hell, Anthony West won that race. I call that a wash, quite frankly. Essentially, Rabat is the class of the field. He's a metronome. I think he's already top class ready, in my opinion. He's already got the consistency for it, in my eyes, and... You know, I don't see anyone in the field being able to be a consistent, you know, thorn in the side to him. I think Kallio did an honourable job last year for the first half of the year, but got blown out of the water in the second half. And I think that could happen again this year. I mean, I think there'll always be a couple of guys that will upset the apple cart early on in the season, because Moto2 is a little bit unpredictable like that, like we saw with Viñales. The start of the year, he won his second race in the circuit in the Americas and didn't really get up there again for a little while. But for me, I think Rabat's got to be the odds-on favourite.
Bex, is that how you see it in Moto2 this season? Obviously, he won the championship so dominantly last season. I know it went to the final, or the final couple of races of the season, but Rabat always seemed to have it in hand, really, from the summer when he seemed to break Kallio with those three straight victories. Rabat certainly starts this season as the man to beat again.
Yeah, he's on my piece of paper as the guy that's going to be the one with the arrow on the back, and I honestly think that he'll be able to handle the pressure, and I think he's going to retain his title. I'll be completely honest, he's the person who I'm tipping to win the championship this year. I just think he's got everything. He's got absolutely everything going for him, and he's going to be high on confidence. Mm. And I honestly think that he's going to be able to do it twice. I honestly do.
Yeah, does the fact, Dre, that there are so many Kalexes on the grid this year and very few suitors, does that make a Rabat domination more likely?
A little bit, yeah, because, I mean, the two biggest threats to the championship that Rabat had last year were both on Kalexes too, and that was Kallio and Viñales. And it still kind of was a Kallex-dominated field last year. Suter did kind of come along strong towards the end with Thomas Lüthi, who I think was the best rider in the class the last couple of rounds and was up there being a bit of a needle for Rabat towards the end. But if everyone's on Kallexes and Rabat's already done a couple of years in that seat and is the reigning champ and was the best on that same bike over the course of the season, then... For me, it kind of makes it a little bit easier, more than a little bit harder. It's a bit like McLaren in Formula One going from Mercedes, leaving their power unit by going to Honda, thinking, well, you're never going to beat the factory team if you run the same engine, so maybe take a chance with somebody else, and the upside might take them over the top, so to speak.
Well, perhaps they may get a contender from another constructor. We'll come on to that in a bit. Bex is ready to chip in on that one. But looking at last season... 14 of the 18 races were won by a Kallex, just 3 by suitors. Those were 2 for Lüthi in Motegi and Valencia, and the maiden victory that Dominic Agata got on a Suzuki at the Sachsenring. 1 victory for Speed Up, that of course was Anthony West in the wet at the Dutch GT at Assen. So again, it's not as if they took a dry victory, it was a victory in the wet, so it was a Calyx dominated series. Looking at this season's entry list, 22 Calyxes, 2 suitors, 3 speed ups and 3 tech 3s. That doesn't speak volumes for the championship, in my view, Dre. I don't know about you, but should the championship be a little bit more varied than that?
That was the whole point of Moto2 when its series came around as an inception back in 2010. That was the whole idea, was trying to embrace and celebrate different chassis manufacturers coming in, putting their own spin on their bikes, and, you know, having a flexible championship. And that's the... It's kind of a drawback when it comes to one field dominating the field, because it becomes so much more rider-influenced, and there's always a risk. I mean, in one hand, it could make the field more competitive, because if the difference in rider is close, it'll make the field more competitive. But if there isn't, then it'll make the field more spaced out, and it will kill all enjoyment, because essentially you'll have one or two or three guys at the top. And Moto2 last year was kind of somewhere in the middle. Like, on occasions, it was like six or seven guys at the front. A lot of the time it was just Mark VDS and then everybody else. So it could be... I'm not 100% sure on that one, but if Calyx are going to dominate the field, then it's not a good look for what the series was trying to portray more than anything else.
No, I mean, you mentioned 2010, and I'll reel off the names. Suter, Moriwaki, Speed Up, Motor B, FTR, Tech 3, Calyx, ICP, BQR, Bimota, MZRE, Promo Harris, Force GP210, ADV. These were all constructors that took part in the first Moto2 season and took part for the entirety of the season. You know, these aren't just constructors that chipped in for the odd occasional race, because there are plenty of those, like TSR, that chipped in for the occasional race. The fact that we're now down to just four, and only one of those is really playing a sizable role in the championship in terms of supplying multiple teams. Only Tech 3, I think, are supplying a couple of teams. And Speed Up as well, supplying two teams. Bex, that's not really what Moto2 should be about.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make a great advert, really, for Moto2. And I have to hold my hands up and say that, if I'm completely honest, for the past couple of years, it hasn't really been my favoured class. I have to hold my hands up and say that, you know, during the night races, if there was one race I'd fall asleep in, wouldn't mind just catching the highlights, you know, the next day, it would be the Moto2 race, because it just didn't really, you know, it didn't thrill me, or, you know, it didn't really sort of, it wasn't as enjoyable as the other two races. If I'm 100% honest, then, you know, it was the one that I didn't mind missing. If, you know, it was a stupidly early morning race, like in Australia, and I fell asleep, which I usually do, because it's not that hard. I'm always tired, and I usually fall asleep easily. but it's true. Mm. It's all these late nights being a student. It's just, it's just killing me off. But if I'm honest, like, it's not a great advert. Last year, I think the championship was probably one of the best it's been in, say, 3 years. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed the Moto2 races last year quite a lot, actually. They were a lot better than what they have been. But in saying that, it's kind of disappointing that there's only that, you know, what, four manufacturers in the Moto2 class. It really is, because there's just no variable.
No.
And I can't really figure out a better way of putting it in the fact that it can run the risk of being ultimately, or becoming ultimately boring. And that's a lull that we don't want the Moto2 class to fall into, because I think it's going to be a hard lull for them to get out of. I really want to see more manufacturers getting in there, because I think it's only going to be detrimental to the Moto2 class.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to be so negative about the class. Well, if you believe what Beck said earlier on, then maybe I don't. But another slightly controversial question. Dre, you made the point earlier on about how loaded Moto2 is in terms of talent. But is it? Because as I reeled off the names, that's only one of the top 15 riders in last season's Moto2 series has moved up, or moved away from Moto2, and that was Maverick Viñales. The other 14 of the top 15 have stayed in the class. Jordi Torres, Nico Tirol have left Moto2 for World Superbikes, and that's not because they were too good for Moto2, that's because they weren't good enough.
No.
So is the quality of the field that great? Because let's face it, if you look through the list of names in Moto2, they're all quality riders, but none of them are exactly banging on the MotoGP door, are they?
I think there's many reasons for that. I don't think it's just down to the fact that, you know, there's a questionable level of talent in the class. MotoGP hasn't had this many seats in it for a long time. Not to mention, if guys are coming in from World Superbikes, there's even less on the table to go around for Moto2 guys. The ladder system is somewhat flawed when World Superbikes is still it's like a branching out path out there to the side on a ladder, which is normally quite straightforward. Like, you go through the CEV title, you go through 3-2 and then the top. That's what normally happens, and it's not really worked out the same way anymore. Jack Miller skipped the whole class altogether this year, and you know, Tirol and Torres has jumped out of the ladder. Guys like Crutchlow, Baz, Laverty have jumped in from the side, basically, and when that happens, it creates a logjam at the top, because there's now 15, 16 dudes in Moto2 who are, at least in my opinion, good. There's five or six who I think could walk into the top class right now, but there's no seats to go around, so they kind of have to stick around. And by the time they might be really good enough to get a seat elsewhere, their appeal has gone down because they're older. I'll give you a prime example of this. Thomas Luthi, who's 27 years old, who was, you know, a former champion before, and, you know, is clearly a top-tier runner in Moto2, you know, a top three or four kind of guy, who, you know, was top suitor last year as well. But no team is going to employ Thomas Luthi for their top-class seat anymore at 27, when there's guys like Maverick Viñales or Alex Marquez or Alex Rins, who are stud talents you can get behind, who are young, who are fresh, who are more exciting. I've used the term sexy pick before to describe these kind of situations, and I think that's kind of how it applies here. I think there's a combination of a lot of things, but I do agree as well. I think that the talent pool is a little bit overrated, but I think at the same time, it's not entirely their fault they're not getting MotoGP seats at the top, because let's be real here, guys like Maverick Viñales roll around there once every 10 years maybe, and that's rare in itself.
So where did the likely threats to Rabat come from then? Is it like to be likes of Callio and Luthi and Agata again, or could we see one of the rookies, could we perhaps see the likes of Alex Rins do a Viñales and do what he did last year?
I'm not sure. For me, I think I said this on a couple of weeks ago, a show a couple of weeks ago, where I said, I feel like there's a top tier of maybe three or four. You've got him, you've got Rabat, you've got Zarco, who look very good in testing. I think Agata is quite underrated, and I think Thomas Luthi is a guy that could challenge. Whether the latter two, Agata and Luthi, can adapt to Kalex's after being on suitors for their entire careers remains to be seen. We'll have to wait and see how that one rolls out once the race rolls around. But, you know, it depends on the situation, really. But I'm not entirely convinced on Alex Marquez and Alex Rins, because if Marquez has to keep changing his riding style and he's only 19 himself, then that's going to take some time to get used to, especially when it comes to actual races and being in these thick mid-card feuds we get involved in so much. For me, I think the biggest threat to Rabat comes from Johann Zarco, in my opinion, and I think a hungry Johann Zarco more than anything else, but I'd like to be proved wrong on that.
Just sticking with the rookies, Bex, I mean, there are the two star rookies that we both look at, Rins and Marquez, and that's no disrespect to the likes of Florian Alt, who's moving up to Moto3 this season, and Zakwan Zaidi, who's a Malaysian, who's going into his first full season, but we're all looking at Rins and Marquez, who were so strong in Moto3 over a couple of years, and they're now finally moving up to Moto2, which some would say, in Rins' case, is a year overdue. How strong do you think Rins could be? Because he certainly looked the stronger of the two rookies in testing.
Yeah, those two were kind of like the pinup boys of Moto3, weren't they? They're the ones that everyone's eyes were sort of on, and, you know, the fact that they finally got the big call in and been able to move up and you know, and get a team in Moto2, everyone was happy because, you know, they realistically, neither of them could stay in the Moto3 class another season. They would rot in the Moto3 class if they stayed there another year. So it was the right decision that both of them moved up. But I think that Alex Rins has definitely kind of got the... Personally, I think Alex Rins was the better rider out of the two when they were in Moto3. In that sense, that he should have an easier transition in Moto2 moving up. And he's sort of proved that. He's proved that so far throughout testing, if I just get the testing times up, that he has actually been the better of the two. And that doesn't surprise me, if I'm completely honest. In terms of can Alex Rins do anything like what Maverick Viñales did last year? Probably not, because I don't think he's that talented as yet. I think he's going to be one of these where, you know, he gets used to the bike so far for this year, and next year is where he really sort of mounts the challenge. But I think that he will be top rookie for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't think he will... if I'm completely honest, and I might as well just fully go out there and tear everyone else down to shreds, because I have done so far for the rest of the show, for the last, like, hour and 40 minutes of the show, I don't think he'll be challenged that hard by Marquez at all. I honestly think that Rins will be top rookie by a country mile.
Well, let's talk Marquez, because he's been struggling so far, and you mentioned, Dre, that he's had to adapt his riding style to suit the Moto2, and this week's testing in Jerez was almost entirely washed out by the weather. And for a kid like Alex Marquez, who's still trying to learn how to ride a Moto2 bike, that was the worst possible piece of news for him.
Yeah, well, a washout was the last thing he would have wanted to see after, you know, needing more time to get used to the bike. It's a totally different animal. I mean, a Moto2 bike's got 140 horsepower, a Moto3 bike's only got about 80 horsepower, and they weigh about twice as much as well in terms of weight. For a guy like Marquez, who's spent his entire career on Moto3 bikes for the most part for the last 3 or 4 years, to suddenly hop onto that kind of bike is going to be difficult. And, you know, you need to utilize that testing time as much as you possibly can when you're a guy like him, still only 19, class rookie, a lot of hype behind you as well, obviously, you know, because of your slightly more famous brother, and the fact that you're going to, on paper, the best team in the field as well. You know, you've been hawked up by the perennial powerhouse of Moto2.
Teammate to the world champion.
Teammate to the world champion as well. So it's all working against Marquez in that regard. It's to a ridiculous, almost unfair degree, quite frankly, given how good Rabat, you know, has been and is, essentially. So, you know, for that to be a thing and, you know, to lose time as well is just a bummer for Alex Marquez.
I think we all questioned his temperament, didn't we, and his mindset at various stages of last season. I think that's going to be put to the ultimate test this year.
Agreed.
For Alex Marquez. He's got to look at the likes of Tirol and Cortese, who moved up from the junior class, as it were, and struggled early on, not necessarily got to grip straight away. Not everyone will be a Viñales. Not everyone will make that jump straight away, and I think he's just got to keep his head. There's no question that the kid is phenomenally talented, and that given time, he'll get to MotoGP in the future, but he can't let this break him like it probably broke Nico Tirol moving up to Moto2 and not cracking it straight away. Okay, Tirol won a couple of races, but he was never the finished article as a Moto2 rider. He was always occasionally a championship, or not even a championship contender, but certainly a race-winning contender. He was only that good occasionally. He wasn't that good consistently, which he probably should have been. So Marquez has got to... He's got to accept that he's in for a rough year and not let that break him, as I say, as it did with Tirol. Cortese's made steady improvements, but he's not quite hit the heights yet. Maybe this season will be a breakthrough of the year for him, as it may well be for Zarco. These are all riders that we're talking about who will be on Calyxes in Moto2, and we've already slightly alluded to the fact that perhaps if there's going to be a threat to a Calyx rider this season, or a threat to Esteban Rabat, it may well come from someone on something other than a Calyx. Step forward, Sam Lowes.
He sits on
a speed up that looks to have made great strides over the winter. So, Bex, Sam Lowes' realistic expectations for 2015 are?
I think he could really... Oh, no. Right, okay. Just don't rip me down. Right. But I think...
No promises, Max.
I think he could I think he could realistically aim for a podium or two over the course of the season, and to finish about 6th, 7th. I think that would be a good season for him.
I wanted to rip her, but that's actually a strangely fair answer.
Yeah. In fact, I thought you'd be a bit cautious there at first. I mean, Drake, can Sam Lowes win a race this year? I think he can.
The potential's certainly there. I mean, he had flashes of brilliance last year on that terrible speed-up bike, and, you know, he was almost on the podium in Brno before he was going a little bit too hard and hit the deck. He had an easy 4th place if he was, you know, playing it safe, because the field was so spread out there during that race in Moto2, and the potential is there. If the testing numbers hold up, there's no reason why he can't steal a round or two, in my opinion. If his racecraft is up to scratch, and I'm actually being more positive about this than you are, Bex. I can't believe I'm saying this.
No. I honestly believe he's going to get... I honestly believe he'll finish on the podium. I think that one of those podiums... I think a couple of times he'll finish on the podium. I honestly believe that. And I think that one of those occasions could possibly be a race win. Like, I think I know from being a Sam Lowes fan, he has the potential to do it. And we have all seen the testing times from Jerez this
Very
week.
Very positive.
And he topped them, and he did fantastic. And yes, you're right, it was wet, and so he was, what, I think he was about 2 seconds off the pace of what the test in February, the fastest time in February was. But if that's the case, then I honestly think that he's going to be... He's been vocal over the winter, and especially in the lead-up from the testing, he's been vocal on social media that he's happy with the bike and that this year is going to be the year. I referred to it last week, you know, he said, with the photo he put on Instagram, about it being...
You know, wouldn't you?
I may follow him on Instagram, may.
Yeah, of course you don't.
But no,
you
I
follow
I
him in general.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't. Why? Alex is my favourite one of the two.
It's a big tree, like I said.
I'm just gonna carry on with the fact that I honestly believe he's gonna win a race. And if he doesn't, I think he'll be a crying shame, because I think he's got the potential, and he's so happy with the speed up camp at the moment. The inroads that they made towards the end of last year, you could clearly see we got the happy smiley Sam Lowes back, which is what we all wanted to see. It was what we wanted to see, because he came over from World Supersport, and I'll be honest, I didn't have high expectations because I didn't think it was a great bike, but I didn't quite think it was going to be as drastically bad in that sense as it was. And I put that down to the fact that he needed to get used to the bike, and it was all a complete learning curve for him.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, yeah, exactly. So you can't be that hard on him. This year is when he needs to step up to the plate. And I believe, hand on heart, that he's actually going to step up to this plate and take a couple of race wins, get a few podiums. And I think finishing, if he finished 6th, possibly even steal 5th, on the last day or something ridiculous like that, then that is a good season in terms of Alex Lowes and the speed up guys. I think ready for a bold prediction, guys. Shut top up. Speed up.
Well, I wonder who it could be.
Strong field he's up against.
Oh, no, but I honestly think he'll, because Anthony West beat him last year.
He's got to beat Anthony West and Julian Simon.
No, but Anthony West beat him last year.
Oh, shit.
It was a point. I think it was a point that separated the two, and that was because of the race.
Yeah, to be fair, Sam Lowes was top speed up last year in everything but the point standings.
Yeah.
Anthony West's victory skewed that a lot.
Absolutely romp it home this year. I think he's going to... I honestly do think he's going to romp it home.
Comparing him to Anthony West and Julian, I've never been the same since the leg break Simon, is kind of a harsh indictment on Sam Lowe's more than anything else. Mm. This is coming from me saying this.
I'm just trying to big him up that much because I don't want to disappoint myself.
I think Ryder and team, though, have learned an awful lot, haven't they, from 2014.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was a stage last season where Sam Lowe's was suggesting blatantly obvious improvements and changes to the bike, and the team just wouldn't listen to him. And it seems as if there seems to be a level of trust built up now between Sam and the Speed Up team. And let's not, you know, the Speed Up may not have been the greatest of bikes last year, but let's not lose sight of who this team is. This is a team that won many races with Andrea Iannone in Moto2. Iannone used to be with this Speed Up team and won races with them. So they're a team that are capable of doing it, given the right rider, given the right machinery. Well, and I think this season they have both.
Well, I think this year it definitely is showtime, because I've just found the photo on his Instagram and it said 2014 was a rehearsal, 2015 is showtime. And I believe that it's going to be his show. And I really, really hope that he takes the leading role and steals it with a march, because...
Sam, if he's... Sam, he's a man. If he can do it, no one can. Go, Sam!
Wow.
Hey, I've just been your second member of your cheerleading society. You know, it makes sense.
But nothing I've said is unreasonable about Sam Lowe's season.
No, to be fair. This is I'm taking the pee. Like, you're absolutely right. I can't see any reason why he can't challenge for wins. I'll be straight up with it.
I think he will. I will be very vocal on Twitter and might not see him crossing the line because I'll have probably already fainted by then. But hey-ho, at least he'll do it.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you all about the other Brits in Moto2 this season, but unfortunately there aren't any. Sam Lowe's flying the flag himself. Gino Ria was on the Moto2 entry list as of the beginning of February, but of course, as you know, he's moved across to World Supersport and doing a good job there too. So, predictions time. Bex, I'll start with you. If it's not Sam Lowe's, and if it is, by all means say so, who will be the Moto2 champion this season?
Tito.
Dre?
We're going to have our first repeat world champion, Tito Rabat.
Yeah, I can't look past Tito Rabat either. I'd love to give you a shout from left field, but I don't see rider who could mount. I think there'll be many riders on a given weekend who will challenge him, but I don't think anyone's standing out as a guy that could challenge him consistently enough. Because I think Rabat, one thing we know about him is he is relentless. And he will be at the very sharp end at every single race weekend.
I like Zarco, but I don't like him that much.
Sam,
I can't do it.
Tito Rabat gets the full house from the three of us then. I think Moto3, though, is looking likely to be a lot more open in 2015. Largely because of the names we've just mentioned. The likes of Rins, of Marquez, of Miller, that have all moved out of Moto3 to either Moto2 on MotoGP. Dre, Moto3 is open at the best of times, but is, even by Moto3 standards, is this the most open season in the class's history?
Could very well be. There's not a single landmark rider, in my opinion, a guy who's a clear title favourite. There's not even two or three guys in the same tier who I could say, maybe these three will stand out for a title. No, it's more like five or six, quite frankly, who could easily challenge for the title. I think I said it on last week's show or the show before where I mentioned how, for me, I think there's a bunch of 8 out of 10 riders in this class, are guys who have question marks or guys with certain flaws in their game. And the fact we have so many unpolished apples, so to say, in this tier, you know, it could make for a very, very competitive series in my eyes.
Each of the top teams, Bex, from last season's championship have had to replace their best riders. We've mentioned the riders that have departed. Estrella Galizia have gone with two rookies in Fabio Quartararo and Jorge Navarro. And the Rebel KTM IO team have replaced Miller, and indeed replaced Danny Kent because he's moved teams, with Miguel Oliveira and Brad Binder. Now, these are two nearly riders in Moto3. One who's, for me, flattered to deceive in Oliveira, and one who's punched above his weight on a Mahindra in Brad Binder. But neither of those are riders that would initially stand out to you as nailed on champions of the future, but these kids have got a golden opportunity in 2015.
Yeah, they're not the sort of show stopping names.
No.
sort of knocking about, you know, they're not who I'll be honest, I haven't tipped either of those to be close to winning the title this year, in actual fact. But go ahead, boys, go ahead and prove me wrong. You know I love it when that happens. But no, they're not the show-stopping names. They're not, and I feel harsh, if I'm completely honest, I feel harsh saying that. But you have to be honest, you know, the Moto 3 class last year was pretty epic. I just love it. It was great. This year, I think Dre hit the nail on the head when he said that there's so many guys that you just don't know enough about their form at the moment to really say how good it's going to be. So Qatar's going to be very interesting. So in that sense, like, I think out of the two, if I'm completely honest, then I guarantee you guys are going to bite my head off, right? If you look, like you just said, if you take the two teams that you just mentioned, Estrella Galizia, who have got two rookies, and you've got the Red Bull IO team that have two guys that have already been in the Moto3 class, I know which ones I'd tip to finish above the other team. And I'd go with the two rookies, if I'm completely, completely honest. Because I think from what I've seen in testing so far, what was that, Dre?
It was just a. I'm pondering my thoughts.
Well, the two teams have both gone in very different directions, as Beck said. And I think another key difference between those two teams is Estrella Galizia on Hondas and the Red Bull IO team on KTMs. Yeah. And I know we can't take too much from testing Dre, but I think there were signs there last year that it could be on the cards. Are KTM in danger of being left behind here by Honda?
A little bit. I just think KTM doesn't, in my opinion, have a single heavyweight hitter in that camp, in my opinion. Like, they've just lost it in Jack Miller. And Miller, as much as his attitude had problems, the man was darn quick, especially at the beginning and the end of the season. I look at their front three, their leading attack in the Red Bull Lions team, which is essentially the factory team for all intents and purposes. Mm. You're looking at Harald Hanniker, who was a midfield runner last year. He might kick on this year because it's his second year in the class, but I'm not convinced on him. Brad Binder, who was good in spurts last year, but
on a Mahindra.
Not a consistent spot. But again, he was on a Mahindra, so there's question marks about him. Then you've got Miguel Oliveira, who again came close to podiums last year, but again was on a Mahindra. So it's like, is there more in the tank from him now? He's on a technically superior bike.
Oliveira's the strange one for me. This is a kid who beat Maverick Vinales on more than one occasion at the same age when they were in junior, what is now the Junior World Championship in Spanish Championship. This is a guy who his career reads like a tale of unfulfilled potential. He's never going to get a better chance, is he, to fulfill that potential than this year?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, the guy was a stud prospect as a teenager, and again, like I said, he was better than Maverick on the same machinery, which is astonishing when you consider Maverick Vinales is arguably the best talent not in the top class until this year, but last year was blowing people's minds of what he was doing in Moto2 as a rookie, may I add, on top of that as well. So I don't know. I'm not sure where it's all unraveled for Miguel Silva. Maybe he's not had the same kind of opportunity in the sense of Maverick, you know, being on a superior bike, and, you know, Oliveira being on a Mahindra was a little bit unlucky from the get-go, maybe. But this is a golden opportunity. This is Oliveira's golden carrot. If he really is as good as Maverick is, then, you know, he should be a prime title contender. On paper, he should be anyway.
Yeah, I think this is his big. I mean, he was in the right team at the wrong time, wasn't he, a couple of years ago when he was at Estrella Galizia alongside Alex Rins and didn't quite cut the mustard. There wasn't an awful lot to choose between Rins and Oliveira that year, but Rins was a rookie at the time and has only got better since. So, Oliveira, you're absolutely right. Oliveira was being mentioned in the same light as Vinales at that age, at the age of 16. They were seen as the two great prospects for the next 5 or 10 years in the Grand Prix World Championship, and Vinales has left Oliveira behind, and it is up to Oliveira to step up this season. Are all of these names that we've mentioned, Bex, and you've already alluded to the two, Estrella Galizia, are they all in danger of being left behind by some stellar rookies? We touched on them last week here on Bike Live. But Quartararo in particular, and Navarro, who was runner-up to him in the Spanish Championship last season, are both with Estrella Galicia. Are they the guys to look for in MotoGP this season? If we've got a group of riders who have already been in the series that are a much of a muchness, could we well see, for the first time, I think, in Moto3, a rookie come straight into the series and win the thing?
If you want me to be completely honest on what I have on my notepad in front of me, then yes. I did a little bit of prep for Moto3. I hold my hands up and say I did. Then yes, you will, because I think Quartararo will be the guy. I've just been... I know we keep saying we can't take anything from testing, but the fact that he's virtually near on dominated most of the testing, and when he didn't dominate it, his teammate did. When you look at it like that, and you think, well, actually, these two guys have proven the pudding, because though they're stepping up, and though it was the, I say only the Spanish championships in inverted speech marks, inverted commas, behind my mic, you know, they still got some meat behind them, and it's still the fact that they're bloody good on the bike. So if that's the case, then they've gone to arguably the best team there. I don't even, it's not even arguably what I'm saying arguably for. It's not arguably. They've gone to the best team. They have got proof in the pudding that they can ride the bike, and they can ride the bike well. And they're also showing that they don't, you know, that they're quite good, because if testing's anything to go by, they're one lap sort of, you know, but their one lap speed is incredible. Then in that sense, how it realistically can it be that inconceivable that one of them could win it? I don't think so. And they are the two that I think you need to definitely watch out for. And if you want to go and win yourself some books, because I don't know what the odds are, but two rookies going into the series, and they've got to have some quite good odds to challenge for the title at least. And I think, if I hold my hands up and I'm completely honest, a title contenders.
Yeah, 2015 is definitely shaping up to be a battle between the nearly men of Moto3 and the rookies of Moto3. So to pick a rider from the former, because we're going to come on to the Brits now, if this season is the big opportunity for Miguel Oliveira, then surely, Dre, opportunity knocks for Danny Kent. Because if the story for me, if looking through all the preseason tests that have taken place, the story seemed to me to be Quartararo versus Kent. That's how it's looked so far. Kent has got the opportunity of a lifetime, as far as I'm concerned, because he's not on the KTM / Husqvarna this year. He is on a Honda. And I just think this season, if Danny Kent's ever going to be something in Moto3, this is win or bust for him this season, for me.
This has to be it.
This has to be it.
Like, he will not get a better opportunity than this. He is on the, in my opinion, the best bike in the field. He has got a team to himself, and he's Danny Kent. Like, that should be enough, like, on paper. Like, we all know that Danny Kent can and has done it before. He can win races, he has won races, and he should be a title contender on paper. It's just one problem with that, one small niggling problem with that. He's Danny Kent, and that's a problem, in the sense of, he always takes too long to get going. That's always been his problem. He's a slow burner. The second half of the season, he's fantastic. Round Motegi, he's almost invincible. But that's besides the point. He always takes too long to get going, and that frustrates me, because the guy is really talented. The guy's really good. And you know what? At 21 years old, he's no longer the young boy in the class either now. There's dudes that are literally 6 years younger than him now in the field. And that's terrifying. But besides the point, this has got to be Danny Kent's year. It just has to be.
He does actually have two teammates in the...
does he?
Yeah, in the Leopard Racing team. I'd love to call it Leopard Racing, but I am reliably informed that the sponsor's name is pronounced Leopard.
It's Leopard Racing. Leopard Racing. Anyone tells me.
Yeah, let's hope they don't change their spots this season. But Danny Kent, he's got a teammate, a rookie teammate in Hiroki Ono, and another teammate in Efren Vasquez. There's a nearly man if ever we heard one.
Vasquez is back.
He's just snuck under the door in terms of the years limit. So I do wonder if he's going to get turfed out mid-season when he turns 29. Or whether he'll be allowed to see the season now. It'll be interesting about that. But the other Brit, who Vasquez was teammate to last season, of course, at the Saxoprint Racing Team Germany squad, is John McPhee, Downforce Radio's Motorcyclist of the Year in 2014. The test for him, Bex, is the progression suggests that he's going to be a real threat this year, because he's gone from occasional point scores in his first year to regular points and front rows last season. But if the curve and the upward curve continues, then he's going to be troubling the podium this year.
I hope so. I really, really do hope so. Because, as you say, it's gone from strength to strength to strength. It was a nice, steady sort of flow. He's kind of took all the right steps at all the right times during his career, like in Moto3 so far, in my personal opinion. And I hope that he manages to keep that form going. I think the season that he had last season was, in no uncertain terms, pretty incredible. If I'm honest, because I going into last season, I didn't rate him. I have to hold my hands up and say I didn't. But he shut me up a few times, because he managed to score points that I didn't tip him down to score. And so I hope that he is managing to challenge for podiums, because it would just be like another string to the bow that he can sort of check off the checklist and continue progressing as the rider that we all want him to, we all want him to be, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it is a big year for John McPhee. He's got another experienced teammate. He's got Alexis Masbu alongside him at the Saxoprint team. So he's got he's got a good yardstick to compare himself with.
Yeah.
At that Racing Team Germany squad, and the way his career has gone so far, this is the year where he should be challenging for victories. I mean, let's face it, he did actually challenge victories. In the sense that he was in a leading group on the last lap on a few occasions last season, but he was always mid to the tail of that pack rather than right at the sharp end of it.
He got a fastest lap last year.
And he was on the front row in consecutive races at Matiki and at Sepang. So I think the speed is there for John McPhee, and he is one of a number of riders. I think you could probably go into double figures of suggesting riders who could compete for this season's championship if they string a succession of victories together, because I don't think anyone's necessarily going to dominate. The predictions that we've all given so far have been fairly predictable. I'm not so sure these will be. You can give a couple of names if you want, because I don't think there's an obvious favourite. You perhaps may have a favourite and at a dark horse. Dre?
He was my dark horse bet, but I'm now going to make him my full pick for champion. I'm going to nail my nuts to the mast here, and I can't believe I'm saying this. Miguel Oliveira.
Blimey, I thought my pick was from left field. Bex?
Oh, we're going for out-and-out champion? It's Quartararo.
Your Quartararo is the one that's snuck up on me that I feel...
Wimp!
I feel like... You know what? I had a name in mind before testing started, and I shouldn't bottle it and give up on him. I'm gonna stick with him. I'm going to get laughed off the show here, but this is a rider I've thrown my support behind in the past. Do not let me down, Romano Fanati. This is your year, my friend. Here's a guy who has won races in 125, has won in Moto3. His season fell apart in spectacular fashion last season. If this kid has learned to qualify, then this kid can win the championship.
Oh, it's going to be a fun season roasting you, son of a...
Romano, don't let me down. Valentino Rossi will nail his balls to the wall if he doesn't win the championship, and I'll be queuing up behind him. I'll be handing him the hammer.
With a baseball bat.
Yes. Romano, don't let me down, kid.
Oh, boy. And I thought Miguel Oliveira was a hipster pick.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. I thought my pick was from left field.
I think I've picked the best one.
I think you probably have, to be honest.
Chicken. You went for the obvious one.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't think the odds are available yet. I did check yesterday to see if there were some odds available for Moto3. There's a couple of each way bets for you if you manage to find some bets between now and next weekend, Fanati and Oliveira. But I think it is. I think it just demonstrates how open a Moto3 season we are in for, and we all can't wait for it to get underway. We hope you could join us next week here on Bike Live when we will be in the thick of the opening weekend of the MotoGP, Moto2 and Moto3 seasons. We'll also be able to look back on the second round of the World Superbike Championship, which takes place this weekend in Thailand, the World Superbike Championship's first visit there. And we'll also give you a preview of a new British Superbike season, which will be a week away when we speak to you next. My thanks to Rebecca James and to Andre Harrison for joining me on this very special preview of the MotoGP, Moto2 and Moto3 seasons, and we look forward to sharing this season with you from the three of us.
The UK's best motorbike radio programme. This is Bike Live.